Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Bob Tomesch, who is a senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and Extension Department of Horticulture. Pleased to have him along. And certainly if you have a gardening question, it hardly seems likely that we could even talk about gardening given the cold weather out there, Bob. But tell you what, there's plenty to talk about. And one of the things is the garden catalogs.
Oh, definitely. They're coming in, and this is a good time to be gardening from the inside looking out, especially with a weekend like this. They're coming in, and I think we have a lot of choices that we can make in terms of the vegetable and even the fruit selections that we want to try in our home gardens. And so I even find it kind of fun to even go on the internet and search out some catalogs or have a number come in, and just so you can see what different varieties are out there.
Well, there's lots to talk about, and you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org to join in. Larry in Oostburg is with us, so let's go to Larry. Hi, Larry. Thank you for calling.
Hi, this is Larry Stroiny. I have an orchard, Stroiny Orchard in Oostburg, and I would like to expand into some vegetable crops, including muskmelon or cantaloupe. But what is the difference between a muskmelon and a cantaloupe?
That's a good question.
That's really starting to fine-tune, and that's one I'd probably put on an exam in the vegetable production class. What you're looking at is the muskmelon usually has a fine webbing at the top, and they usually the varieties ripen a little bit earlier. Flavor-wise, they're pretty close to the same thing as muskmelon.
Or cantaloupe.
The cantaloupes tend to have furrows from the flower end to the end where the stem attaches. And they don't quite have that webbing on the outside. They usually are a little larger fruited, and they may have a little stronger flavor. But either one is fairly popular. The smaller ones sell better if you're going to be selling fresh market. And as you said, you're hoping to expand. People are looking for a little smaller fruit, and this is something to be looking at the garden catalogs. There's a number of cabbages out there that are smaller now. You don't want to bring home that 13-pound cabbage that you eat on for a week. They want something they can use in a meal or two. And so some of the new varieties coming out, and take a look at those. They're smaller featured, and therefore they're set more or less styled for one meal. And those are things to look for.
Fantastic. I was actually looking, thinking that maybe the larger fruit, like the 6 to 8 pound, which you would call cantaloupe, would be better. But now you're saying, well, maybe the muskmelon is better. So I will look at that. Very good.
What you do is you grow both and you sell and you see which one sells better. And then you kind of build up your growing and marketing strategy from that.
And then the honeydew, now that is the same family? Or?
Yeah, it's in the same group, yes. And that one tends to be a green-skinned, green-fleshed.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Thad in Manitowish Waters, your turn. Hi, Thad.
Hey, guys. Say I have a question regarding growing of some clover or some sort of other edible grass for deer up in far northern Wisconsin.
Okay.
I have a new home we're building, and over in the septic area, there's quite a bit of clay in the soil. I'm wondering, what do I need to do to that area to get clover to grow?
Well, your biggest problem usually over those types of systems is the soil they put back in is not the best quality, and you might want to have some topsoil brought in just to build that up a little bit. Also, when they put in a septic system, your most fertile soil is in the top foot or so, and they probably put something on the top that was not that top foot, that maybe down 2-3 feet, and so it doesn't have the nutrient quality. So you might want to do that, take a soil sample, go from there. The only caution I have is once you invite them that close to the house, they're eating all your shrubbery and everything else.
Yeah, I'm expecting that for sure.
But it'll work. You could do some clovers in northern Wisconsin.
Oh, yes. There's the white clovers and any of those, and that's even good for partridge and other critters.
Yeah. Oh, great. Okay, guys, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, on this edition of Garden Talk as we visit with Bob Tomesch. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Bob, I'm on the Dane County Tree Board, and one of the things that we're looking at is getting some information out to people who might be considering pruning their oaks because you've got to get that done before April 1st.
And there's a reason for that. We set the date of April 1st, but it's before we really have insect activity. When you make the cut, later on there's sap starting to flow. Insects come to feed on the sap. If it happens to be a diseased tree, they're moving it from one tree to the next. And so that's why we're encouraging people to prune oaks during the dormant period. And this would be a good time to contact an arborist or someone that does that type of work and have that work done.
Yep, get a hold of a certified arborist.
And there's even some extension publications on that if you want some more information.
All right, excellent. And as long as we're talking pruning, what about those apple trees?
Well, it might be a little cold this weekend, but usually the commercial growers are already out there doing pruning. I had received an email from someone this past week that we're already beginning to do so. This is a good time. If you only have one or two trees, wait until the end of February, 1st of March, when it isn't quite so cold. It's not only better for you, but maybe a little bit better for the tree. But get out there, prune with a reason. Don't just get out there with the clippers and say, I'll take that one and that one. Part of the things that you want to be removing from any of the fruit trees are any broken or damaged branches from the previous year. If you have one that tends to really hang down and tends to point downward, you might want to remove that. I often tell people that when there's a real heavy crop on, mark some of the branches you might want to remove at that time because mm-hmm. it's going to reoccur probably not that year but the following year. Then thin out that tree so it's fairly open. We're actually farming the sun, so we want the sun to get into that canopy, and so remove some of those branches. As we get older, we want them a little bit shorter, so in our training system, we want to keep them topped and growing outward. I think, in reality, we tend to leave too much branch material on fruit trees. We're doing some research projects up at the Peninsula Research Station in Door County where they're doing some real intense pruning, and I see the day someday we may be managing our fruit trees almost like we do grapevines. In other words, really keep them consolidated down, and they still produce the amount of fruit that we want.
Excellent, and with fewer problems.
Definitely. You have more light coming through, less disease problems because of air movement.
Nick in Green Bay's got a question for you, so let's go to Nick. Nick, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The question I have is, I wanted to put a garden in the backyard. Well, I just don't have time for that. So I was thinking about berries, like some type of edible berries, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, anything back there. Something that will just grow on its own pretty naturally. The only question is, I've got no green thumbs at all. how do you start something like that?
Well, with anything you want to, you're saying you want to try something with the least amount of labor.
Exactly,
and,
yeah, definitely.
And so one of the things you might want to consider doing is looking at some of the woody fruit-type plants and place them in a plot just like you do your landscape plant materials. In other words, using bark mulch, or if you really want to push it, you could put some fabric underneath or newspapers. You know, they put about 6 layers of wet and then cover it with about 4 inches of bark. So you can select it that way. With that, you're kind of limited to the bush type non-spreading. Raspberries tend to spread. And when they spread it to the grass, you have other problems there. But look at things like blueberries, currants, gooseberries. There's Nanking cherry. Those are just some examples that tend to be bush-like, and you can grow them and have a fairly good crop.
Yeah.
Okay, now, my backyard is pretty woods. Is that going to grow them back there? Or?
Well, now you've got another challenge, and that's shade. Fruit crop is going to produce best in full sun, and so you might want to kind of take a look out there when the trees do leaf out and say, well, there's a sunny spot, and work from that. But that's a definite consideration. If it's shady, they're going to grow, but they're not going to produce fruit.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call if you want to join in. Someone talking about differences between cantaloupe and muskmelon or whatever. We also have a question. What's the difference between a sweet potato and a yam?
Well, that's one of those things where nomenclature tends to walk over each other if you were going to look at it. But in reality, they are two different types of plants. We just tend to cover the names. Sweet potatoes are a tuberous root system. They tend to be a very strong yellow in color, whereas the yam is more of a root-type structure. They're very long and whitish in color, and they do not taste as well as the sweet potato. They're quite starchy.
Yep. So if you're looking to plant sweet or even to go to the grocery store, yep, you'd see sweet potatoes, although they sometimes call a yam a sweet potato.
They cross over. I said it's nomenclature. And, of course, that was another exam question that really wanted to pick away at what they were reading. But there are two different types of plant materials, and we unfortunately use the same name for both.
Let's go to Val in Pulaski next. Val, hi. Thank you for calling.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm trying to figure out how can I get my apple trees to bear fruit every year. Is there a secret to this?
Yes, there is. How many trees do you have?
I have six.
Okay.
And they're delicious and max and golden, and they're all spaced evenly and everything. So how can I do that?
Okay. What's happening is often fruit trees go into what we call biennial bearing. In other words, one
Correct.
Year they have a heavy crop, and while they have the heavy crop, they're feeding the apple. The tree is feeding the fruit on the tree and not producing very many flower buds. And so the following year it's got a low crop, and
Correct.
Then it goes back and forth. The way you can alleviate that is through thinning. There are commercial thinners out there which you could try, and I've seen these available in garden centers.
What do you mean by thinner? You mean thinning the
crop? It's a chemical product. I mean, I'm going to give you two options. One is a chemical product that you can spray on the tree, you have to spray it on right after petal drop, and it'll give you that label instructions. You apply it, and what happens is it knocks a large number of fruit off the tree.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, at the end of the growing season, only about 4 out of every 100 flowers ever end up as an apple.
Correct.
So that's one way. The other way is if you don't want to use chemicals, you can hand thin the tree where you want to cut off or remove apple fruit, and you should save one for every 6 inches on the tree. If you're going out a branch, you can kind of thin it out. And when you do that, then you want to do that one before they're the size of a nickel or before, I'd say, mid-June. Because that's at the time when flower buds are an issue for the for the next year, and you want to have that plant in a scenario where it's going to want to produce flower buds.
Can a guy go online and find that information from you guys too, or no?
There's a bulletin calling Growing Apples in Wisconsin, and some of that information would be there.
Right through your county. Well, go online to the University Extension.
Publications. Learning Store.
Yeah, go to the Learning Store.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And I'll give that. I can't remember the address, and it's such an easy one. I ought to be able to remember it. It's Learning Store. Well, we'll get it. Let's go to Leroy in Appleton next. Leroy, hi.
Yes. Good morning.
Morning.
I've got a number of fruit trees, different varieties: peach, apricot, plum, green plum, and they're in my backyard. The problem I have is I have a black rot on some of them. I trim them back a lot, but I have a schnauzer that I'm concerned about spraying in the backyard, as far as some of those are so poisonous. Is there a product out there that I can get that is not so poisonous that a pet wouldn't be bothered?
Well, there are some things like Bordeaux mixture and some of those things. But what you're doing is probably the best approach that you have is pruning out. This is called black knot of plum, and it's
right.
Probably only occurring on your fruit. One of the things, when you do make a pruning cut, sanitize your pruning shears because you may pick, or that disease is going through between the bark and the wood. And you may pick up some of that. When you make the next cut, all you're doing is inoculating that tree in another location. So dip your pruning shears in like 70% alcohol. We used to recommend a 10% chlorine solution. That eats away on the pruning shears, and so people have gone over to using alcohol.
Great.
All right.
Try something.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And by the way, for the Learning Store, I just actually went on the search engine and put in Learning Store, University of Wisconsin Extension, but the actual address is learningstore.uwex.edu. learningstore.uwex.edu.
And then when it comes up, it goes into fruit or vegetables or a number of categories.
Right, lawn and garden and everything else. So you've got a little navigating, but not much. And let's see, can sunflower seeds be overwintered and planted next spring? Somebody else called in with that question.
Yes, they can. The only thing is sometimes the plants that you have were hybrids. and they have, so all of them are nice and uniform.
Yeah.
The next time around when you plant those seeds, you're going to have some interesting things. And I'll use the large giant one single flower on the top. If you took those seeds and planted those out, you'll probably end up with one with many small heads on it. And it's because it tends to revert genetically back to what one of the parents happened to be. But yes, you can plant them.
Bob Tomasch, Senior Lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and Extension in the Department of Horticulture. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller with my guest Bob Tomasch. We'll take some more calls. You can join in at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Carol in Algoma, you are next. Hi, Carol.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about sprouts. We have a garden, a pretty big garden every year, but I've never really tried sprouts. That's not quite true. I have tried them, but they've never really grown very well for me. And I wanted to know any secrets that you might have. And the other question is, I wondered about alfalfa because I've heard that alfalfa is really not a good sprout to grow because it's not healthy for you, that it will inhibit the immune system. Do you know anything about that? And that's the one seed, of course, that I bought recently that I was going to try and grow. So I wanted some opinions
on
that.
Starting out, when it comes to growing sprouts, I would do a quick search on the computer because we're not growing sprouts in the garden. You're actually growing them in a water-type environment.
Correct.
And the sprouts are very popular, and they've kind of lost their favor a little bit because of certain disease bacterial problems that were originating in the sprouts. And people were reacting to some of the bacterias that were there. And so even when you go to a restaurant, you don't see sprouts on the menu very much.
No.
And that's part of the reason. The other thing is when we start looking at the legumes, there are certain ones, you are right, that I don't know which ones exactly, but they do have some impact on the digestive system. Some will have some impact. And that has to do with the certain proteins and alkaloids, et cetera, that are found in the seeds.
So?
So what I'm saying is if you're going to try growing these, I would do a quick internet search. I've kind of shared with probably the most knowledge that I have on that one.
Okay.
That's not been my forte. But I know why they've kind of taken them off the menus, and that part of it had to do with...
So I'm just going to have to really do some investigating and be careful. I've just heard about alfalfa. That's the only one. And I thought, well, gee, you know, because you're supposed to be so, well, I thought, healthy for you and wonderful in salads. We eat a lot of salads. And I thought, well, maybe I could try those.
Yep. I'd do some search on it. You'll find out all kinds of little bits of information.
Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, I was trying to think back. It was maybe the 70s where we used to grow. They had alfalfa sprouts that we grew and put on
legumes,
the salads.
Legumes, lentils. I had two students from Denmark at the time that were in my class. Aging. I was teaching in the 70s. Anyway, when they were so impressed by the sprouts, they went back and they were grad students. So one of them wrote a grant and got money from the Danish government to develop the growing of sprouts.
And is he still doing it?
No, he passed that on, but he got the technology. He is now a plant breeder over there. There's another one. I went to visit him once. He was selecting poppies that did not have opium. They were only show for flowers.
Oh.
And so you could grow those. And he said, I was getting ready to harvest the seed, and somebody broke in and stole all the plants. They probably thought that they were. Oh. So he said, I lost all my genetic work that I had done for 5-6 years.
Oh.
And this was just a sideline that he was doing. But.
Somebody thought they were getting some opium.
There's some real opium, but it wasn't.
Oh, boy. Ken in Verona, it's your turn now. Ken, hi.
Hi. Say, I want to ask a couple of questions, actually, about apples. I only have a couple of apple trees. One's very old, probably, I don't know if anybody ever planted it, if it was wild or whatever. It does produce pretty good apples, although they're small because I don't take care of the tree and buggy. Anyways, it seems like everything I plant now in that area gets this looks like almost like a black fungus on it. And then the second thing is the apples that I do get on my one Mac tree, they're usually small, and how I would describe them is they're knobby. What's causing that?
pests and diseases.
Yeah.
One, the reason they're small is you have too many fruit on the tree. And the knobbiness...
Well, this is a different tree.
I know.
It's two different trees. The one that's knobby is on a tree that gives me about five apples, and I prune it pretty heavily.
Yeah,
and, I got two different kinds.
And I would suggest if you want a more perfect apple, you're going to have to look at some type of spray program with some pesticides. There are home orchard sprays and that available.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Well, then you've got a couple of other choices that you could try. One would be bagging apples, where they take a plastic lunch bag or sandwich bag, and you slip it over the fruit right after the petal drops off. And that way the disease and insects can't get to the fruit. And that would be one thing. And you can do a Google search on that. I also have a couple of publications on that, but I don't think I have anything up on the internet on it. But you actually slit the corner of the Ziploc bag, you slide the bag over it, staple it with a hand stapler on each side. And like I tell people, how many apples do you eat in a year, Larry?
I don't know.
100?
100 maybe.
Okay, you could bag 100 apples in about 2 hours, and then you'd be all done with your spray program. So for a backyard gardener, that's something to consider if you don't want to use any pesticides.
Well, what's that black?
The black is it on the leaves or on the fruit?
It's on the bark.
Yeah. It's possible that it's either second tier, some cankers that are starting, and that's because if your tree isn't pruned properly, the additional shade and everything else. Also, those cankers begin to evolve when the tree gets older, or they show themselves. It's probably been in the tree for years. It doesn't kill it outright, but it that's what it could be.
Yep. All right.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate the call. Meg in Algoma, it's your turn. Hi, Meg.
Hi. The woman with the sprouts, has she tried mung bean sprouts?
Mung bean sprouts.
Another legume, yes.
Another legume.
Yep. Okay, my question I want to focus is, I put in a mock orange bush about 4 years ago. It's grown quite nicely, and it hasn't flowered. What do I need to do to get flowers? I do mulch.
Okay, is it in the shady spot?
Not until 1 or 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah. You need a good 6-7 hours of sunlight.
It gets the morning sunlight.
Yeah. That may be one possibility. Is it under an eave of a roof where it's not getting ample water?
No, it's outside of that, and it gets plenty of water.
Yep.
It's at near my water barrel.
And it's growing very well, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm still guessing that are you fertilizing?
Only compost.
Okay, well, then that shouldn't overdo it.
That shouldn't overdo it.
I'm guessing it probably has a amount of sun that the plant is getting. That's one of those that are probably a little higher up on the list. If it doesn't get enough sunlight, it does not flower. And it could be that your shade is coming over the plant too early in the day to initiate those flower buds.
Okay.
That's probably it.
Got to pack its bag and move it out in the yard a little farther.
Oh, it's gotten sort of big.
You might want to try a second one. Where are you located in Wisconsin?
Algoma.
Algoma.
I'm on the lake.
Yeah, you're in a warm spot.
Well, yeah, the lake modifies our climate quite a bit.
Yep. Okay. Otherwise, and there are some parts of Wisconsin, there were some Zone 4 mock oranges, and once you get north of probably Highway 8, I see mock orange growing up there that doesn't flower. And that's because it just, like tomorrow morning, it'll kind of take care of the flower buds for the year.
I'm about 6 miles south of Door County.
Yep. You're in a fairly nice spot.
Yeah, I think so. It's a beautiful town.
So I'm guessing it's sunlight.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Nancy in Auburndale, hi to you.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
5 years ago, we purchased this property in Auburndale that came with 300 apple trees. Last year was the first time that we were actually able to get the whole entire orchard pruned, and it was pruned rather severely, I thought. In my lack of knowledge, I really felt like last summer we had kind of a dry summer up here, and then with the orchard being pruned so much, I really expected in the fall to have a small apple crop. And the opposite happened. We had a huge apple crop, bumper crop. And I wonder if the two are correlated at all, the pruning and the huge apple crop? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, wouldn't it be?
It would be, but part of it is when you were pruning, you were actually thinning the trees. You were taking out a lot of the flower buds, and that's why you had the nicer apples at that time. Don't expect that every year. This year you may not have very many fruit because sometimes, was there a lot of growth on the stems this, not stems, the branches this last year?
There seems to be.
Yeah. And part of that is because if they were pruned as severely as you suggested, and by the way, you need to really prune them severely on a regular basis. What happens is that stimulates a lot of new growth and sometimes there's fewer flower buds in there. But yes, it was what you were doing is another form of thinning where you're removing a lot of the tissue, and therefore the root system was still there to produce a lot of nutrients even though it was dry up into that tree, and so you had a fairly good yield.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Ron in Menasha, on to you. Hi, Ron.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering, I had planted some apple trees and plum trees up in my cabin in Tigerton and 2 years ago, and I was so proud of them. They were blooming and everything, you know, getting leaves. And then I noticed one weekend a deer ate some of the tops off. And I was wondering, will those trees still produce if they can make it to adulthood?
Well, you covered it right there. Deer will prune them rather severely. I would, in that area, there's a high deer population. And I would suggest you do some type of fencing to keep or to protect that tree. Once you get it high enough, then they can't reach those branches anymore, and you're going to probably have to have a ladder to harvest what you got, but at least you'll have something. Some people go out and buy like 7.5, 8 foot trees or even wood posts, set them out, and three or four of them, and then put woven wire around just to keep the deer away from the tree. Otherwise, they're just going to keep pruning. We had a demonstration plot, and this is probably back in the early 80s. The deer, and we had planted out rows of trees, apple trees, and the deer literally had a trail all summer long along the trees where they were busy feeding on it. And at the end of the growing season, I had less than an inch of new growth because they kept it that well pruned until we put some type of fencing up.
Okay. All right. I have one other thing I'd like to say. A couple of years ago, my brother was growing the small tomatoes, cherry tomatoes plants,
yeah.
And he loves his garden and that, and he's really good at it. And we had a family reunion one time, and a lot of people from Chicago came up to Wisconsin, and the next day he had a party at his house, and he had grafted these strawberries on his cherry tomato plants. And he had strawberries all over these plants, and my cousins from Chicago, they couldn't believe it. And he would pick one and give it to me and say, oh, boy, these are really good strawberries, you know. And lo and behold, here he had these little wires, and he tied these strawberries to the cherry tomato plants, and my cousins, they just couldn't figure out how he grafted these strawberries in there. But it was so funny.
You had me scratching my head there when you first started giving me the story. Like, how does that just doesn't happen. So.
Yeah, right.
That's a good story.
Well, thank you for the information.
Yeah, thanks, Rod. Good story. Well, if you've got a story to tell or maybe you got a question to ask, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. And don't forget, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Wendy in Black River Falls, your turn. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, dear. How are you guys?
Great.
Good. I have a question about a hickory nut tree that we planted probably 5 to 6 years ago.
Okay.
And it is, well, I don't know, 10 to 15 feet tall. And it seems to be doing well, except when can I expect nuts, if any, and what about dog urine, because it's in his area.
Yeah. You're talking about the disease, right?
The
dog area, where the dog is?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, first of all, when it comes to nut trees, they do take a long time to produce fruit, and you're looking at 20, 30 years from the time of planting. So
really?
Hang on to it.
Oh,
there's a few things
that long.
There's a couple things. When it gets that larger, what you can do is you do an internet search, if you have the chance, on ringing, R-I-N-G-I-N-G branches. And they do that for apples, and I know they do it for some pecans and those types of trees. What you're doing is in the spring, probably around the first part of May, you take a sharp knife and you kind of squeeze it on a branch that's oh, probably an inch and a half where it still has that smooth bark, till you feel that you hit the hard wood, and just take that knife and make a cut around it. You don't peel any bark away. And what happens is that the sugars in that are concentrated in that branch.
Oh, sure.
Until then, around the middle of June, when flower buds for the following year are going to be initiated, and that has to do with a high sugar, low nitrogen constant ratio within that branch area. And sometimes that'll stimulate some flowering and fruiting.
I know.
That's the only
that.
Chance you
I'm
got unless you want to stay there for another 15, 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, one more quick question. How long can you have a small garden going without having to let it go fallow and, you know, follow, whatever, however you want to pronounce it, for, you know, it's a vegetable garden and it's not huge and it's not small, but, you know.
You can, if, as long as you take care of the soil. In
right.
other words, if you, whenever you
mulch,
add organic material,
right.
you might want to look at planting oats in the fall in it, you know, just
oh.
regular field oats, and it'll winter kill, and you plow that down. What you're trying to do is build up the organic content in that soil.
Right.
As long as you do that, you don't need to do any fallow
Good.
Type of management.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear because we need that food.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Wendy. Thanks for calling. Tommy in Marshfield, it is your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. I have a question about apples. Is there a product that you can use that would defoliate the leaves in the late fall so that you can try to get a head start on the disease problem?
Well, defoliating in the fall is going to, your diseases are going to carry over on the leaves that are even on the ground. Or pieces that fall on the ground. And in the spring when we have certain weather patterns, when it's wet for about 3-4 days in a row, it's primarily in May and early June, that's when the diseases start spreading. This past year was very dry, and so we had a low disease pressure, as we put it. And it's because some of those diseases never had a chance to mature and sporulate. But that... defoliating the tree is not going to help your disease management. Usually when it comes to diseases, we want to start, if you're going to have a pesticide program, start applying early in the spring, right as they begin to leaf out.
Even if you rake them up after they fall?
Even if you, studies have shown when you rake the leaves, clean up all the apples and everything, you are removing about 98% of the inoculum. But that 2% that remains there is enough to get the disease going the next year.
Okay.
It does cut the pressure down, but not that. You still have a problem.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And someone talked about for deer browsing, some Door County growers called in to say that they use Milorganite.
Right. Milorganite is a fertilizer from the solid waste plants over in Milwaukee. And the odor, sometimes they spread it around the base of the tree, keeps the deer away because of the odor. There's other products out there like Deer Away and garlic sprays and things like that can also be used. But I have heard that people using Milorganite have had a fair amount of success.
All right. Mike in Maquonigo, it's your turn. Mike, hello.
Hello. Yeah, I've got some apple trees that are about 3 years old. I planted them and I'm finally getting some apples out of them. But I just need to know, when do you prune them and how far back do you cut them?
Well, right now you're at the training stage yet, and the time to be pruning would probably be in February and March. I would suggest you go, and there's a bulletin on growing apples in Wisconsin, and it talks about the pruning and how you want to train that tree. And what you're looking at is saving your main branches, probably the first one about 3 feet off the ground. And people will save a whirl of maybe 3 or 4 branches right in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Go up another foot and a half or 2 feet and save another whirl. And if you want to keep the tree low, you just kind of manage those 6 or 8 scaffold branches, and anything that wants to grow upward after that gets cut off.
Okay.
But I would suggest getting the extension bulletin. It has a couple, 3 pages on pruning in there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And again, you can go online to get that. Just go to learningstore.uwex.edu. Learningstore, all one word, .uwex.edu. And there's lots of publications there. Let's go to Aaron in Watertown next. Aaron, hello.
Hello. My parents have just a great apple tree that the apples, I think, are the best in Wisconsin. And I'd like to try to graft some of the growths onto an existing apple tree. Do you have any information on that or someone I could contact?
Well, where do you live in Wisconsin?
My parents live in Nakusa, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And you're going to transfer it to Watertown?
That'd be the hope, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's possible. Grafting. Check around some of the apple growers. They might be able to do the grafting. The time to collect the sign wood is probably in February.
Okay.
And they'll tell you what type of wood and graft it on a rootstock. Just as a suggestion, I'd get some type of dwarf rootstock like Bud 9 or Mauling 7, Mauling 8, Mauling 9. They're usually M9s and that type of thing. Those will produce fruit for you probably at about 4 years of age, or if you use the old standard rootstocks, you're looking at 10 years. So you make the choice there. But some of those people will do some grafting for you. Just check around. I know some of them will charge you $20 or $30 by time, but they'll give you a tree that's like a year old that's actually growing.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Aaron, for calling. And the number for you to join in, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. I'm Larry Mueller with Bob Tomesch here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Bob Tomesch, senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and UW Extension Department of Horticulture. Glad to have him along today. Glad to have you listening in. Let's go back to the phones. Roger in Racine is next. Roger, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I have a fig tree, and I was looking for any help in for pruning of a fig tree.
This is in the house, I take it?
No, it's in the house right now, but then I will bring it outside.
Back outside.
And,
okay.
Then I will bury it in the winter for the winter, and but they do throw off a lot of shoots, and that's just how best to prune.
Okay, what you want to do is try to select the structure or the shape of the tree. You're almost managing the whole tree there. And you probably want to prune to keep the tree down to a height of maybe 6 feet or so that you can move it in and out of the door, because you're going to have to provide some winter protection. And then space out some of the branches so that you have maybe a foot between branches, and that'll allow you some fairly good air movement. The leaves on those are fairly waxy in most parts, so you don't have disease problems coming in. But it's the way you're actually training the tree, almost like a bonsai or something like that.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks for calling. Pat in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I'm sure you're going to say no to my question, but I have to ask. I have a spruce tree that is about 40 years old, and it is very prolific in producing cones, and it seems it happens all summer long. Is there any way to stop it from producing the cones?
Like you said, no.
No. Okay. Thanks very much.
Not much you can do, though.
No.
If you could find that, that growth regulator to do that, it'd be very popular. You'd be a rich person, because everybody that has flowering crabs and the crabs that drop on, they're always looking for something like that as well. So you're not alone.
No, but unfortunately, we don't have that discovery yet. Thanks, Pat. Steve in Lafarge, hi to you.
How you doing today?
Good.
Yeah, I've been growing some Russian honeysuckles in town here, and they're kind of new to the area. I guess the regular honeysuckles of the area people don't like very much. But I wonder if you could speak a little bit on these. They produce a real good blueberry-type fruit, high antioxidant and such.
Mm-hmm. Have you eaten them yet?
Oh, yeah, they're really good. And they produce, you can plant them like the first year. They're kind of high in price. But after about 2 years, you'll get fruit off of them. Yeah. And very early in the spring, too. Yeah. Very tasty.
You're the first person that said that he likes those. Usually, those are seedling varieties, and the flavor is going to be different as you move from one bush to the next.
Oh, it is definitely different.
Okay.
Definitely different. But they're large fruit; they taste good.
And one concern that we have about those is just like the honeysuckle was a shrub that we had in the wildlife food packages back in the 60s and 70s, and now they're all over the place. And we do have a concern that this plant could be doing this, could do the same thing. It's,
oh,
it's spread
okay.
very rapidly. So try to harvest the fruit if you do have it.
It doesn't spread the same way either. It doesn't spread, doesn't seem through the side roots coming
no,
up.
It,
you know.
No, but the honeysuckles we have are spreading by seeds. The birds
oh,
come
okay.
in, feed on the seed, leave their dry, and the seed isn't digested in the system. And they're constantly replanting seeds all over the place. And,
uh-oh.
And we suspect that may happen with that plant.
Something to keep an eye on.
Yep.
Well, thank you much for your help.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And Brooke in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Brooke.
Good morning.
Morning.
Say, we've got one single butternut tree. It's a nice-sized shade tree already. I don't know how old it is. It's about 20 feet tall. Do they need another tree? We don't have no nuts on it. It's a real nice-looking, healthy tree. Do they need another tree to bear fruit? And would that tree have to be about the same size? And is there, if they do need another tree, do can a person pollinate it themselves anyway? And I'll hang up. Thanks.
All right.
There's a lot of question there. I don't know for sure whether or not you have to have a cross-pollinator on those. I'm thinking probably not. But when the flowers occur on that, there's going to be male flowers and female flowers, and so you're going to have to, if you're going to try doing some cross-pollinating, is find another butternut tree. You might have to drive up north or someplace, but anyway, be able to get some of those little flowering catkins. And the male flowers are usually out at the tip, and the female flowers are in closer to the branches, and do some pollinating there. But That's about all I can tell you on that one.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Open lines will get you on pretty fast. And, well, we've been dealing with a whole variety of questions here. One, Bob, that has come up, somebody has a both summer and fall-bearing raspberry cultivars. How do you prune each? Should they be pruned differently?
Oh, definitely. The summer-bearing raspberry cultivars usually send up the floricane primocane the first year, and the second year branches and fruits. And so we usually suggest remove, and then that cane dies. So usually during the winter, or sometimes some people do two prunings, but you prune out anything that's branched, and then you thin out the primocanes. Those are those single stems, saving about 4 or 5 per linear foot of row. Now, with the fall-bearing varieties, they will grow the primocane, and then it'll actually start branching and flowering in the fall. And some of the older varieties started producing fruit in September, and now the newer ones like Autumn Bliss and Autumn Britain will produce fruit as early as the first week of August. But the whole secret there is that when you do your pruning, which is normally in the winter or early spring, is you want to cut all the canes off as close to the ground as you possibly can, get rid of them, and the new growth then will grow and go through that life cycle and produce fruit that very early. If you save some of those canes, I'm going to get a few extra fruit off or whatever. If you leave some canes in that planting that are larger, it's going to have an impact on how fast those new primocanes are going to mature and flower. In other words,
okay.
If you leave a few there, instead of like Autumn Britain having flower or fruit by the 1st of August, you're not going to have fruit till probably the middle of September. It sets them back about 5 weeks.
Oh, that's the fall bearing. So cut them all down.
Cut them all down. Start over.
Peter in Antioch, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I hope I'm not sorry for doing this, but I got a trumpet vine to attract hummingbirds. And the vine's doing beautifully, but it didn't flower the first year. I'm just wondering if it if there's something I'm doing or not doing cause that thing to flower.
That's an age factor on those. Sometimes they require about 4 years or so of growth before they will begin to flower. They do need full sunlight in order to do that. So that's a couple of issues. And then some people, if they fertilize too much, in other words, fertilizing the lawn right next to the plant, it stimulates a lot of beautiful vegetative growth, but it does have an impact on the flower production. But
okay,
I'm guessing it's an age factor with what you're
describing. The vine is very healthy, yeah. I don't have any problem with that, but I've heard a lot of horror stories about the trumpet vines. I'm just hoping I can keep it under control.
Yep. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Michelle in New Denmark, your turn now. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about willow trees. We just moved to Wisconsin and have some land out in New Denmark, and we've always liked the look of willow trees, but never, neither my husband or I have ever planted or had or taken care of one. So I was wondering about varieties and how close do they need to be to a body of water?
They don't need, you're talking about the weeping willows, right?
Yes.
Yeah. They don't need to be next to a body of water. That's willows are often associated with water, but that's not necessary. They grow very fast. I would look in some of the garden catalogs from Wisconsin. You'll see some in there, or go to a garden center and they'll carry some like Niobe, and there's a few other varieties there. Spacing-wise, they grow very rapidly. I would look at spacing them at least 30 or 40 feet apart. And when you have a large, mature one, they probably need to be as much as 60 feet apart. And they're going to block your view. So when you sit down and look at where you want, do you want to just have one as a focal point, or are you going to look at a hedgerow? Then that's going to have a whole different scenario in terms of screening what you will or will not see.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Michelle. And Kenya in Harvard, Illinois, it is your turn. Hi there.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I have two questions. Last year I planted a really cool wildflower garden in front of my house. It's not a large space, and it produced some beautiful flowers. And I was wondering, since I'm a kind of a new gardener, will they automatically come back? Would these be considered perennial since they're wildflowers?
Most times they are. There are a few varieties that will seed and come back, but many of the wild flower mixes will have perennial-type flowers in there, and they should come back each year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then I had another question. I planted probably about 100 bulbs, and I have been worried sick because in our area where I am, and it got really warm, and then it got cold again. Will that affect my bulbs?
I don't think it did because we didn't see any growth. We've seen some years where it really got warm, like in February or March, and they start growing. But it's only the leaf tissue that's coming above the ground. That flower stalk is still down below the ground, and so when it gets cold, it's usually protected. I've only seen one year in our years of experience, Larry, where that flower bud must have been emerging already, and we had some severe cold weather, and it did damage that.
Thank goodness. I've been worried sick. Okay.
Yeah, I had a meeting in January, and there was somebody there when we had that warm thaw. He says, yeah, I went out and finally planted my bulb. So.
Awesome. This is my first time, so I'm getting excited every year. It's great. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks, Kenya, for calling. Appreciate it. Good luck with those flowers. Peter in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Question. I've got two Austrian pines. That were planted like in the 30s, no later than the 40s, 1940s. And one tree always had cones, the other one never had cones. And now all of a sudden, in the last couple of years, the second tree that never had the cones is starting to produce them. Does this make sense at all?
There's a lot of factors involved there, and having an Austrian pine that old, that's pretty good because they are a little more susceptible to certain diseases that we have. Usually a tree produces cones when it's being stressed. That could be water stress. It could be age stress, and that may be your scenario. In other words, before we leave this world, we want to leave a lot of seed behind, and so that's what might be happening there. But being that one fruited one time, you know, for a while and the other one didn't, that's immaterial. I'm guessing it could be just the way drainage patterns or anything else happen to be occurring at that site.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, thank you very much.
Have a good day, too. Peter, thank you very much for calling. And let's see, Mike in Hartford, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Good. See, I have a question. I live in a new subdivision. And I'm looking to get some privacy between windows, and it needs to be up about probably 20 feet. What would be a good fast-growing tree that would get me there in a relatively short amount of time, I guess?
Okay. Yeah, if you look, there are some trees that are faster-growing. The willows would be one example. The silver maple, some of the red maples like Autumn Blaze. The whole secret is if you're going to plant something, you want it to grow fast, is to put it on a good watering schedule. And I'm talking about providing about 12 to 20 gallons of water per inch of trunk diameter on a weekly basis. And in doing so, you should be able to get about 4 or 5 feet of growth on some of those types of trees each year. And then also there's a bulletin on fertilizing landscape trees. And usually the fertilizing is done in the spring when before really growth starts, and follow that fertilizer application schedule. And that's also based on the diameter of the trunk.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Bob Tomesch, who is senior lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and University of Wisconsin Extension Department of Horticulture. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Bob Tomesch, senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and UW Extension Department of Horticulture. Glad to have him along. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Julie in Milwaukee's online. So let's go right to Julie. Hi, Julie. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I have a question about my wisteria. I planted it in the backyard about 10 years ago and grows like crazy, but I really don't get any blooms, you know, maybe 2 or 3 a year. So I don't know if it's a pruning issue, fertilizer issue, or just this type of, you know, wisteria is not right for our climate.
No, we're on the borderline of that for that one. And tonight will be a test night, or tomorrow night when it gets down to 15 below or whatever. I'm guessing there's going to be a number of wisteria across southern Wisconsin that probably won't bloom this year. Or some of them may be pruned back to the root zone. Okay, things that kind of impact flowering on the wisteria. One is full sun. Definitely needs full sun in order for it to flower. The other thing is cut back on the fertilizing. And people think, well, I don't fertilize the plant, but if you have a real heavy fertilizer program for your lawn, those roots extend out into the lawn area, and they will pull a fair amount of nutrients from that zone. And so that can impact the flowering potential. So those would be about the two of the things that I could give you for what might be impacting your flowering potential.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Julie. Terry in Grafton, it's your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have several birch trees in my front yard. I guess you call them white or paper birches. They're not river birches, but they're at least 15 years old. I didn't plant them, but they're such a weak tree, and I want to support them. In spring, I put the disist on around the roots to, you know, take care of the leaf miners, but I'm wondering if I should be fertilizing them or is there anything else I can do to ensure their happiness and strength so that they so they survive. What can I do for them?
Okay, well, a couple of things. One is thinning out the tree so that they're not overly crowded. That could help out. So you have you select some real nice trees to grow. Mulching the root system is very important. I don't know if you have a lawn area, you can get by with it, but if you mulch out from that trunk area, that's going to keep the soil temperature cooler, and, of course, birch trees like a cooler soil temperature. We often stick a birch tree out in an open lawn where it's relatively warm. After a few years, they become stressed, and we have a whole host of problems. And using the disistan is a good thing. It not only takes care of the leaf miners, but also the birch borer, which can be devastating where it feeds on the cambial zone on that tree. So thinning would be one thing. Looking at putting mulch around them would probably be phase two. When you have drought, place the trees on a watering program.
All right. Root feeders worthwhile?
Yes, they can help.
Mm-hmm.
It's one way of getting that those nutrients down below the grass line. Usually if you spread it over the grass is going to utilize probably 75% of those nutrients you put there. And so even in any fertilizing program, whether you're using that or if you're going to use granular fertilizer or the fertilizing sticks, they suggest placing them down about 4 to 6 inches below that turf grass root zone.
Do you use a high-acid fertilizer?
Well, acid fertilizer isn't the way you'd be asking to use a high nitrogen fertilizer. Usually
okay.
Not. And again, when you buy the fertilizer products, they'll tell you about how much to put on per the root zone or the size of the tree. There's also, as I mentioned earlier, extension bulletin over in the learning store, or you stop at your local county extension office, and it'll talk about fertilizing landscape trees and shrubs.
Okay.
Okay, good. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Terry. Angie in Green Bay, hello to you.
Hello. I'm wondering if you have a recommendation for a good plant, a good short plant to grow in between the spaces of a rock walkway. Maybe something that would be fragrant. I'm thinking maybe a mint or something, that when you walk over it, it would kind of be a little fragrant.
Well, when it comes to the mints, that whole family is herbaceous. But you could have small, instead of having woody plant materials, you could use some of the different mint products that are out there. Look in the garden catalogs and search more than one catalog. There's going to be different types of mints or that mint family that's going to provide you different types of odors. And what you're doing is in that rock garden or whatever you happen to have, these would be perennial plants that you'd be putting in place. When it comes to shrubbery, you usually recommend smaller statured shrubbery. There are a number of dwarf-type trees, especially conifers, that you might want to consider. A little pricey, but they're very showy in that type of setting, and people often purchase them just for that. Otherwise, there are some low-statured trees. There's a bulletin called Selecting Landscape Plants for Wisconsin. That's also available through the store. And in the back side of it, or in the towards the back of it, it's going to list a number of deciduous trees and shrubs, and it gives you the height and everything else. And so you can select some of the smaller. They have one whole category of low-growing shrubs, and you might be able to select something from there.
I'm kind of thinking something more of a plant that would actually be on the walkway that you're walking on. That would just be growing in between cracks.
Yeah, there's some short types of lilacs that are not bush form but almost tree form.
But I think she's talking about a walkway where it's like a sidewalk.
Yeah, you'd be walking over it. Right now I just have grass growing.
And then the cracks in the sidewalk would be where instead of grass she wants something like mint.
Oh, okay. Oh, I gotcha. The problem with any of those, you could grow that there. But any type of abuse, whether it's walking
mint
or mowing,
it
just can't tolerate that. It's got to be kind of a protected area.
Is there any other type of fragrant plant that would work for that?
Not that I'm familiar with.
No.
Okay. No. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, maybe, I don't know, if you could put it along the outside?
Well, there are some grasses, ornamental grasses, the real low-growing fescues. And I think I remember reading someplace there are some cinnamon-scented types that we'll have. But the problem is many of those, as they mature, they give off that odor as a ripening process. And in that, you know, trying to grow it between the slabs of rock, just
it's not going to work.
Nope.
Maybe along the edge if people aren't walking along. If they're using the walkway, if you plant it along the edge, you might get away
Then
with
you'd
it.
Have some options there.
Yeah. Rebecca in Platteville, it's your turn now. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I was interested in planting catalpa, horse, and a Chinese chestnut. Is there any pros and cons? I'm in southwestern Wisconsin, good old clay soil. I have about 9 acres, some woods, some mostly. I got places I could put them in full sun. Any pros and cons against horse chestnut? And by the way, do you know where I can buy one?
I find those available in the garden catalogs. If you look in there, you'll find all the catalpa. You might have to do a little searching. That one isn't quite as fun. It's sometimes called the bean tree, but that's a zone 4 plant, and that does fairly well. The only thing with the horse chestnuts is that the nuts, if they're eaten by cattle, usually squirrels will leave them alone, but they can eat them because of a high tannin content.
Uh-huh.
And if there's some domestic plant, I'm talking about horses, goats, et cetera.
Right.
Sometimes
I have horses, so I have two. So
that's something you might want to check in with your local veterinarian as to if
could be a problem.
It could be a problem, yes.
What about the Chinese chestnut?
The Chinese chestnut, now you're talking about the survivability in terms of the winter. They will sometimes grow, but those are not as high in tannin. That's a whole different genus of plants when you talk about Chinese chestnut.
Now, if I plant this horse chestnut where they couldn't get it, where I had it fenced off, what's the chances, you say a squirrel wouldn't touch them? Well, they wouldn't carry them and then plant them someplace else where I wouldn't know about it? And
but then you're talking 20 years before the tree gets into production.
Okay.
You got to look at these time factors. There's also some other interesting, some shrubbery types of, we call them chestnuts. They're called buckeye. Ohio buckeye is another name for them. And there's some, there's a bottle bush buckeye, and there's some red flowering ones. I haven't seen them very much in the catalog, but I hear they're very beautiful plants.
And they take this kind of weather and
they're
like,
supposed to
like
survive in southern Wisconsin, yep.
Bottle bush buckeye?
I believe that it's a red flowered buckeye of some type.
And do you know how tall they get?
Those are shrub type, and they probably get, they'd be tall shrubs, maybe 12 feet.
Oh, that'd be good.
But do
can
a little.
Ask one, what, can I ask one more question?
Sure.
I'm also wanting to plant on the margin some very tough roses, preferably kinds that I want at all. I want them to bloom all summer, and I also want them to be disease resistant, and I want them to smell good.
Huh.
Anything?
Well, you've put a big order in that one.
Yeah, and
that
I don't care how tall they get because it's not going to be a place where they're going to get babied too much.
Yep. There are some old-fashioned shrub roses that'll do fairly well. The problem with roses, many of the older varieties will flower once and that's it. Yeah. Or they may flower in June and then they'll flower again in late August. They do kind of a biennial thing. There are some varieties out there that will flower almost continuously. And, you know, you need to shop around and read the descriptions on there.
Okay.
Another thing to look for with the roses is there are some of the old field-type roses and some of those that have some very nice fruit on them that will last all winter long and show a nice and red color during the winter months. So just another option.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And Jonathan in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Jonathan.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I am a new homeowner, and with the home came several full-grown silver maples.
Okay.
There are low-hanging branches that my brother calls suckers and suggests that I get rid of those because it takes away, it sucks from the top branches. When is the best time to cut those off, and then do I need to seal the wound with anything to prevent disease, etc.?
One, you don't need to seal the wound. That's something we had done years ago, but they find it's better not to. And what he's talking about aren't true suckers. Suckers come from the root system. What you have are called hangers. And the reason on a silver maple, what happens is those it grows fast, and some of those lower branches, in a trying to get to sunlight, will drop down and then grow outward. And those are the ones that you start bumping into and everything else and thinning out some of those. I would you might even want to check with an arborist in your area and have them come in and do a real good management program in terms of establishing a good tree structure and branch structure on those silver maples, and that'll cut down on some of the problems you do have
with them.
Thank you very much.
All
have
right.
A grateful day.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, John. Pat in Land O'Lakes, hi.
Hi. See, we have a cherry tree in the yard, and this last year we had leaves on there, we had blossoms on there, we started getting fruit on there, and all of a sudden all the blossoms and the fruit just disappeared.
And leaves, too?
No.
Oh.
Most of the leaves stayed on there.
Okay. There are some of the cherry trees that require a pollinator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know what variety you have, but with the sweet...
It was the red sour cherry.
Oh, the Montmorency.
Yes.
Okay. Guess that one. Montmorency will do some self-pollinating. Many things happen up there because you're more in the northern part of the state. Is that the plants will flower, but the flower has had some damage during the winter months because of the cold.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at a zone 4, and you're trying to grow it in a zone 3, and so you'll have beautiful leaf tissue, but the chances of fruit is going to be probably once every 5 or 6 years if you're lucky.
Oh,
so and also, humidity plays a factor in some of those cherries as well. You know, they like a more humid environment, and it just gets too hot and dry up in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'd find...
Because before this year, we always had, you know, we always had some cherries on there.
Okay.
But this year was just like everything just disappeared.
It could have been the dry weather then.
Oh.
If you've had success in the past, you must be in a little microclimate, mm-hmm. knock on wood,
uh-huh.
and you're doing okay.
Oh, okay, because the apple tree did fine last year.
Yep. Yep.
So watch the moisture there.
And it was very dry for a good portion of summer in many parts of Wisconsin. And what happens is the tree was being stressed already, and so it just starts aborting fruit. In other words, it limits it down to just a few.
I see. Right. Okay, thank you much.
Yep, thanks much for calling. And let's see, Bob in Bellevue, Iowa, I think is next. Bob, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
Thank you. You had people on talking about deer control in reference to fruit trees or other trees.
Yeah.
We're in northeastern Iowa here in a very heavy deer population area. We planted a bunch of fruit trees and hardwoods last year, and the deer thanked us for lunch.
Yeah.
We talked to a friend, and he said use Irish Spring soap. And we put a bar of soap in a sock and tie it to the tree. They leave it alone.
Yep, and that does work. And that's one of the suggestions that you'll see in many different types of publications. And it's the scent of the soap, the stronger smelling soap that you can use. And, you almost have to hang a bar in every tree, and that'll tend to keep
and
away.
And that's basically we hung two bars for three trees.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've heard that before. And it Irish Spring is a... In fact, I bought some Irish Spring myself.
Back when you were a college student?
No. I bought some last year, and I was going to put it out because of all the problems we had in our lawn, and then I never got around to it. But it's still there, and I'm going to try it this spring, and we'll see what happens. But that's encouraging news. Bob, thanks.
When Larry was in college, they were making Fell's Naphtha soap.
That's all for you. Goodbye. Oh, boy. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for calling. Karen in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi there. Hi, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good.
Good. I'm calling in response to two of your callers' questions, just with some suggestions.
Okay.
I missed the beginning of the woman. Is she looking for, there was a caller that was looking for something to plant between, like, a paver walkway where she has grass currently.
Yeah, she wanted...
She wants something creepy that you can walk upon.
Yeah, but something also that smelled.
Like mint.
I have a couple suggestions.
Good.
The first suggestion would be creeping thyme. It has the wonderful same scent as the herb that you would use in cooking. It's not really meant to harvest for cooking because it doesn't grow as tall, but it makes a nice mat. It gets a real delicate pink flower on it, and it smells very fragrant like thyme when it's walk upon. And it's very hardy in our area. It would prefer a little bit more sunshine than my next two suggestions. My next suggestion would be a plant, a ground cover called ajuga, A-J-U-D-A-G-A. Mm-hmm. And that comes in a couple different varieties, but it gives a lot of nice texture, and it gets a beautiful cobalt blue short flower in the spring. And that forms a really nice, dense mat. And not as fragrant, but just slightly pungent smelling.
Okay.
And the other last one would also have fragrance, but only in the spring. That would be sweet woodruff. Also spreads in a mat form. Both the ajuga and the sweet woodruff can take full sun or full shade. And that also has a real delicate smelling white flower in the spring.
Oh, excellent. So we got creeping thyme,
right?
Ajuga, and sweet woodruff.
Correct. And then in response to the woman that was interested in some shrub rose border, there are some knockout variety shrub roses. The most popular one is the knockout pink, I guess you would call it. It's a beautiful kind of reddish, deep pinkish red rose. It blooms all summer long with a light scented fragrance. And the knockout rose varieties also come in a white and a yellow. So she might want to check into that. Both not the heavily scented, like a nice hybrid tea or the hybrid roses, but this still is a nice delicate scent to those. And if she's just looking for color that'll bloom all summer, like a ruby or a scarlet Meadland rose,
those will bloom all summer, but they have very, very little fragrance. I mean, it's very hard to smell. But both varieties, the knockout roses will grow, depending on their location, 3 to 4 feet tall and wide, with mm-hmm. beautiful rose hips in the fall and winter. And then the Meadland roses will sprawl a little bit more. They'll probably get a little bit bigger, maybe 4 to 5 feet tall and wide if left unpruned, during the season. But they bloom all summer long, both very disease resistant.
Some good tips
very
here.
Very good ones. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Karen.
Oh, you're welcome.
Enjoy
your program. Thank you.
I appreciate the call very much. Well, Bob, as you well know, that's one of the nice things about the show. If somebody has a question and we don't have all the answers, somebody else is there with some more suggestions.
Well, they've had experiences with some of these things. And, yeah. The suggestion of the time, now that she mentions it, I guess I've seen that someplace before. And those are very good ones. With the roses, wealth of information there in terms of there's a lot of materials out there, as I suggested. Looking through some of the garden catalogs, you'll come up with some interesting things to try.
And Carrie in Brookfield, I think, is next. So let's go to Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to plant an American persimmon, and I'm wondering if there'd be a long enough growing season for the fruit to ripen.
Where are you located?
Brookfield.
In Brookfield, west
okay.
of Milwaukee.
Yep. I think you could there. We're looking at the persimmons to be zone 5, and you're definitely zone 5 over there. What you might want to look at is look at some of the varieties that are some of the selections that they do have available, and some of them will have a fruit maturation date, and you want to pick something that's probably around 120 or 130 days to maturity, and I
should
think
you
okay. can success mm-hmm. be successful there.
Okay, great. And do you have any suggestions for rose varieties that do produce a lot of hips?
Ooh, I was just looking at a garden catalog last night, and there are some varieties that are grown specifically for hips.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember the names of those, but do some looking, and there are roses that are promoted for hips.
Yeah, I've been looking, and I haven't found too many, but I will keep looking. Thank you.
Yeah, do you remember the magazine that you were looking at?
It was Jung's Catalog.
Oh, Jung's Catalog. Take a look at
it. I think it was just Jung's and... I don't even remember the second one, but they were general. They weren't.
There is a rose company in Hastings, Minnesota, and it's supposed to be one of the larger rose, and they have a catalog. You might want to take a look in that one.
I will. Thank you.
And all right,
you
thanks.
Probably have to do a Google. I can't even remember the name of it, but do a Google search. I think it's Hastings, Minnesota.
Hastings, Minnesota Rose Company.
Yep.
And you're probably going to find it. And, gee, I wish we had more time, but here we are all out of it. Bob, it's always a pleasure. You'll come back again soon, I hope.
I think he's got me scheduled for February already.
All right. Good for you. Bob will be back in February, and we'll do this all over again. I'm really sorry we didn't get to everyone, but that's always the kind of the way it works. Bob Tomesch is a senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and UW Extension Department of Horticulture. And, of course, we're really pleased to have him with us, and he'll be back next month, and we'll do this all over again. Thinking ahead to Monday, Harriet Brown of Wisconsin Trails magazine is going to come by, and she will be talking with us about the magazine a little bit, but also about all the good things that there are to do in Wisconsin at this time of the year. So we're looking forward to that. In the meantime, thanks a lot for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.